This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
Welcome everyone to the GSMC Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Melanoff. With me, as always, is Mark Souza. We have Wild Card Weekend to talk about, a lot of ups and downs of this weekend, as well as the national championship game that's happening tonight between Clemson and Alabama, as well as some NBA news as a surprising fire. Well, maybe not surprising firing, but a firing nonetheless that we'll talk about later. But first, we have to talk about Wild Card Weekend. We got to talk about the first game that happened on Saturday. What were your thoughts on this weekend, by the way, before we get into it, Mark? What were your thoughts on the games?
I thought the games were very underwhelming, to be honest with you. I was expecting a little bit more.
I agree with you 100%. I was a little underwhelmed by it. I was like, these were not as exciting.
That's just kind of my thing, though, right? Like, I'm kind of like the curmudgeon here, you know? Like, I always, like, expect a little bit more. Like,
yeah. Well, I'm
underwhelmed a lot.
Yeah, but I agree with you on this. Some of these games were very underwhelming and not as exciting as I thought. Especially the first game we got to talk about, the Colts and the Texans. 21-7 is the final score. Colts move on to play the Chiefs. The first seed, the Chiefs. That is correct. And this game was all Colts. There was no Texans in sight.
Yeah, and you know, I took the Colts, and the biggest reason why I took them was because I felt the Texans were a very overrated football team. If you look at the Texans' schedule this year, the only team that they beat that was of any good, or above 500, I guess you could say, was the Colts. But that was the first matchup between the two, and that was the game where Frank Reich went for it in overtime.
That questionable, yeah.
And then they lost that game, and then, you know, the controversy was, you know, he's saying, I'd rather lose
take
and tie.
Tie
or what, I don't
then,
know what he said.
And then we're all yelling, take the tie.
Yes. So other than that, the Texans, yes, they handled business. And every week in the NFL is a tough game. I'm not taking anything away from the schedule because even the poor teams are hard to beat. I mean, look, we just saw a Seattle team lose to the 49ers a couple weeks ago. We see upsets all the time because these teams are so close. Even when we think they're so far apart.
Was the loss to the 49ers a hint of what's to come, do you think?
No, I just think, like, when you're a team in the NFL who's good, you're not that much better than a team that's not very good.
Well,
it's just
it's the biggest league in football. It's the professional league. Everyone's at the best, at their best.
The NFL is a sport where every team, even the terrible teams, have four or five absolute studs on their team, like in terms of athletic freaks of nature. And you can lose any given game, you know, any given Sunday, right? That's what they say.
Yeah.
But when
like
you look
that movie.
Exactly.
Great movie, by the way.
Great movie. Willie Beeman. Anyways.
Al Pacino as the coach.
Mm-hmm.
That speech, oh.
When you look at their schedule, though, it's like they didn't really beat too many teams that I thought were, you know, in the upper half of the NFL. Not just record-wise, but good football teams. Give them credit. They did what they needed to do to get there. They went on that crazy win streak. What was it, 8 or 9 in a row?
I believe it was 9 in a row.
You know,
they
started off the
0-3,
season.
They went 9-3.
So when I looked at the Colts had impressed me against better teams throughout the year. You know, they just played like a Dallas team. They played other teams I thought were more formidable. So I did expect the Colts to win this game because I thought they were a little bit more battle-tested.
I honestly thought the Texans were going to win. I just thought Watson and Hopkins together. I know Hopkins has a little bit of an injury, but I thought Watson was, I felt like he's NFL ready. I thought he was playoff ready. And he did all he could, all things considered. He threw for 235 yards, had a pick, though, and a touchdown. But regardless, I think the person that took over this game and really stood out to me was Marlon Mack, hands down. 148 yards and a touchdown. That's getting the job done when it's needed the most.
And he had a tough game against them. He only played in one of their meetings this year, and that was the game in week 12 or week 13, and he only had like 35 rushing yards. They shut him down. The Texans have been good against the run all year. They're a top five rush defense.
But this offensive line of the Colts is the main story here. They did not let anyone through.
I can agree with that. It's a tie for me. Like
Andrew Luck got sacked zero times.
Either I'm not sure to give the MVP to the entire defense for the Colts or the offensive line for the Colts.
I got to give it to the offensive line. They allowed zero sacks.
Either way,
one
they
of the
both balled out.
I mean,
the Colts defense was stellar against Watson.
When your first round pick, who's the offensive lineman, got all pro first team honors, that's mm-hmm. saying something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's credit to the Colts because they're building something big time. And it's not just Luck. It's not just T.Y. Hilton. They found a player in Marlon Mack.
They have an all-around team.
They drafted Quentin Nelson. Mm-hmm. They drafted Darius Leonard. We're talking about some young
Quentin
studs.
Nelson, have you seen him playing at left guard? Has been impressing me the most. Most of the rookies this year.
Mm-hmm.
Been great. And also the fact that just maybe the Colts have a chance to make a run here.
I will say that of all the teams that I watched this weekend, the Colts were the team that I thought were they
most
could
impressive.
Go all the way. Like, yeah. They could win their next two games and get there.
Them and the Chargers, I would say, are the two teams I can see the most likely getting to the big dance.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the Chargers, or I guess we should go Seahawks-Cowboys first. Cowboys beat the Seahawks 24-22. And before we get into this, did you see the video of the dude that bet the the 2.5?
I did.
And he was like, all right, he's got to kick a field goal and hold on. And then he sees him going for two, and he loses it. Mm-hmm. He lost it. He bet the under. He bet on the Cowboys, and the line was 2.5. And
I did see that.
All he needed to do was kick the field goal. So if Jenikowski doesn't get hurt, then he's fine. But they go for two, get the two, and he loses all that money.
I wonder if they would have gone for two anyways.
I don't know.
Maybe not. But
it would have just been a 3-point game. And then, or they go with the if they went with the kicker that never kicked a field goal in his life.
Yeah, I could see Seattle in that situation, even with a healthy Jenikowski going for two. Sure, it's risky, but you're in the playoffs.
Because if you don't make it, then you're down by four instead of three.
Sure.
I'm a guy that says don't be so conservative. I hate conservatives sometimes. But this is one of the things where it's like there's too much risk involved in this. You got to just – some like if they had Jenikowski, you got to take the field goal. You got to make it still a one-score game regardless of what happens. So, but I understand why they went for two, obviously. They had to keep it a one-score game, and they couldn't do it with a kicker that never kicked on the ground before. He was a, Australian football kicker?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's like, drop kicking and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I would normally think that Seattle would do something aggressive, like go for two, maybe when most teams wouldn't. But considering how conservative they were with their play calls, with their offensive philosophy, maybe they wouldn't have, because that's my biggest takeaway of this game was how conservative the play calling was for Seattle, and it was almost maddening to see you have your best player handing off the football.
Maddening 18, maddening 19, which one?
You have your best player turning around and handing off the football to running backs, and they weren't doing anything running the football. They couldn't do anything at all.
They were stuffed at the line most of the time. There was that 128-yard run by Penny, but that was about it.
They had 24 carries for 73 yards, and if you take away the 25-yard carry and the three 28-yard carry and the three scrambles by Russell Wilson, I mean, they really had 20 carries for about 40 yards.
Russell Wilson, those three scrambles, got 14 yards. Carson got 20 yards on 13 attempts, so he almost past Carson based on just three scrambles alone. And with all those combined attempts, even Mike Davis got some carries. It's really
the crazy
baffling
thing is too is that Russell Wilson was really good throwing the football. 8.6.
Lockett had a great catch earlier in the game.
We're talking about an 8.6 average throwing the football, 18-27. You got sacked one time. How are you not throwing the football more? His quarterback rating was over 100. I mean, come on. and we saw a Cowboys team that was very happy tackling running backs at the line of scrimmage all night long.
So who's at fault here for those play calls? You playing the head coach? I mean, so
the offensive coordinator is Brian Schottenheimer, and he's known as being conservative, and he's known for being a guy who doesn't abandon the run game, which is fine. You want to establish a run, I get it. But if it's,
when
not,
it's
working,
not working,
you can't establish a run if it doesn't work. That's what, like, just because you turn around and you hand the ball off and you get 0 yards and you do it five or six times in a row doesn't mean you're establishing the run. It just means that you're not playing to your strengths.
Absolutely. And honestly, I can see him losing his job over this. Definitely.
He just got hired this year. Who knows? I have no idea.
Oh, you could. So many times a guy, first year guys, get fired for disappointing. Yeah, I can totally see that happening.
It's just mind-boggling to me. Russell Wilson is a proven good quarterback. He's won a Super Bowl. He's played in another one. He's won many playoff games, and you don't give him the ball. I mean, it's a crime that he only threw the ball 27 times. It really is. He threw the ball 27 times in a playoff game. It should be 37 times. I mean, yeah. You don't got to do it every play. Who are you paying money to? Who's the guy on your team you're paying $30 million a year to? It's Russell Wilson.
$30 million a year, my lord.
It's not Chris Carson. It's not that offensive line that's bad. The Seahawks offensive line isn't good.
It's average, I would say.
At best, average. I mean, we're talking about a notoriously bad offensive line.
I've seen worse in this season, to be honest.
Sure, there's worse, but there's not too many worse. I mean, they are in the bottom half for sure. And you're playing against, what's Dallas's strength on defense? Their defensive line. Their defensive line and their linebackers are stout. Where are they weak at? Secondary. Where does
Tyler Lockett tore them apart in the second?
And Tyler Lockett had four catches. He should have six or seven.
Yeah, over 120 yards.
120 yards. He had six targets.
Four catches.
Look at this. Six times they threw him the ball for 120 yards.
How do you not give him the ball every single play?
And we're talking about a player who, I thought DeAndre Hopkins not dropping one pass was the most incredible stat this season. I actually changed my mind this weekend. Because Tyler Lockett has a perfect quarterback rating from Russell Wilson when the ball is thrown to him on this season. Perfect. Perfect. No interceptions.
So are you pissed if you're Tyler Lockett over this?
I don't know if I'm pissed. I mean,
I got to have a talk with my offensive coordinator. Like, what the heck are you doing?
If I'm Russell Wilson, if I'm Pete Carroll, I'm for sure pissed. And I was surprised to see them not adjust in the second half. They didn't open it up in the second half where you think, okay, you go to halftime, the running game's not working. You make an adjustment. You do what you do, right? Yeah, okay, mm-hmm. This is working. Let's try and do this a little bit more. Let's sprinkle this in, right? I saw the same thing. They came out in the second half. I think they ran six of their first seven plays, and they punted twice. And it's like, oh, my goodness. Like, I don't care. Don't even let Russell Wilson audible to a run. Like, because I know some people would be like, well, the quarterback can change the play, whatever. We don't really know who's changing the plays and whatnot. But.
And I think people forget, he has a headset in his helmet who people are yelling in his ear, telling him what to do. And that doesn't help either.
So, yeah, I mean, look. Seattle had 233 yards passing. They had 73 yards rushing, yet they ran the ball almost the same number of times they threw the ball. And they only threw the ball more at the end of the game because they were trying to come back. Yeah, I get doing this throughout the season, preserving the quarterback, running the ball, not letting him take hit.
It's
after
the playoffs.
Hit.
No,
it's
preservation. I'm
it's
sorry.
It's the playoffs. Exactly. Let it loose. You got here.
You can't preserve when there's no tomorrow.
Exactly. You got here. Now, play the game without regard. Play the game to
honestly,
your strengths.
This shows me that the Seahawks making the playoffs was honestly a fluke to me.
I mean, they're a good team. They just had a terrible game plan.
I think they just got lucky with how poor other teams played in the NFC.
I don't know. The NFC was tough.
I didn't see them getting past in the wild card round when I saw these little matchups. But honestly, this proved to me that there's something wrong with the Seahawks and. They might be in a.
I wouldn't go that far. They're a good football
team.
I'm
just saying they might be in a rebuilding stage quicker than most people think.
Well, I'm not saying they're not, but people said that about them last year, said that about them the year before.
Well, they were supposed to be last in the NFC this year. They didn't. I'm impressed by them. Russell Wilson's still a great quarterback, but there's other problems with this team that, like, I don't know. There's a lot of question marks.
They're a well-coached team, though. Yes, this game they weren't well-coached, but they are a well-coached team. I mean, we saw them beat, what, the Chiefs? We saw them beat the Vikings this last month to make the playoffs. Those are games that – those are big games, and they came out winners in both of those games. They beat a bunch of other good teams, too. The thing is, though, is we keep saying that they're going to rebuild, and yet here we are. Look who they did it with this year.
Maybe instead of...
That defense was really, really had some unknown players. They had no Earl Thomas for most of the year. Richard Sherman left. Cam Chancellor retired.
Michael Bennett gave them the finger.
Michael Bennett left, and they still are one of the top defenses in the league.
But I'm not saying the defenses, but I'm saying maybe a rebuild, you got to cut that offensive line in pieces and make a new one.
I mean, the offensive line has been terrible for about 5 years. I think the Seahawks fans will be the first ones to tell you. That's why they traded for the tackle last year. What's his name? Dwayne. What's his name?
I'm
from the Texans.
I know who you're talking about. I don't remember his last name to save my life.
And the fact is that they've missed on a lot of draft picks at line. Dwayne Brown is his name.
Dwayne Brown, that's right.
They've missed a lot on their higher picks for linemen, and that's been a problem for them. It's been a struggle for them. But, I mean, other than that, you got to like what they're doing going forward. I kind of feel like they already rebuilt on the fly. They still have young receivers. Baldwin's getting up there in age, but Lockett's still very young. Mm-hmm. They have Russell Wilson, who's still young. I mean, he's been – which is crazy because he's been in a lot of games, but he's still younger – than a lot of quarterbacks, but
I don't think he's reached 30 yet, has he?
His rookie year was 2011, I believe, right? So he's got to be close. 28, 29.
That sounds about right. So should we take
the Cowboys, though? I mean, we got to talk about them.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, obviously, Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, first and foremost, that's where it starts and ends with the Cowboys, right? If Ezekiel Elliott has a bad game, they probably lose.
They will live and die off Ezekiel Elliott for sure.
I thought the Cowboys played well on offense. I thought Dak Prescott was okay. I think he was good enough. He will need to be better than good enough next week, but I thought he was good enough to win. Cowboys defense, I thought, was fine. They were great against the run. They can be exploited against the pass. That was another thing, too, why the Seahawks didn't throw the ball. Because the Cowboys can be beat through the air. They're just mm-hmm. super good against the run. But it was kind of easy
and
for them.
What you do to stop that is not go on the run. And what they do, they kept running the football.
It was interesting
that Jimmy Kelsey
got hurt for the Seahawks. If he makes that kick, maybe the game is a little bit different, but credit to the Cowboys. They came out in the second half, and they really took the game by the horns, and then, it was hard for Seattle to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, we're going to see the Cowboys in the next round, in the divisional round. Do you see them getting past the Rams?
I'm not sure, but I think that their chances of moving on in the next round went up incredibly when they were told they were going to be playing the Rams and not the Saints. When the Eagles won, that really changed things for the Cowboys, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And kind of foreshadowing what we'll be talking about
in
the next segment.
We should take a break and go on to the next Sunday's games. But first, I think Mark has something to tell us.
Yes. What would it look like if we all, I don't know, just listen more? Listening to audiobooks inspires us, motivates us, and brings us closer. And there's no better place to listen than with Audible. Get your first audiobook free, along with two selected Audible original titles and exclusive fitness programs when you start a 30-day trial. So take the time to listen on Audible. Visit audible.com/GSMCbook or get your phone out and text the code GSMCBOOK to 500-500 to get started today on that free 30-day trial.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Syrup.
Welcome back, everyone, to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We finished talking about Saturday's wild card games. Now let's go on to Sunday's wild card games. The first game that happened was the morning between the Ravens and the Chargers. The Chargers held on from a Ravens comeback to win this game 23-17. Another underwhelming game, if you ask me.
Yes, I agree with that. Again, I will go back to what I thought was another poor offensive game plan by a team, and that was obviously the Ravens. You know, they had 8 passing attempts going into the fourth quarter yesterday in a game they were losing. Now, I understand they have a rookie quarterback, and he's really good with his legs. But the Chargers showed early on in that game that they were prepared to stop the run, and the Ravens never adjusted. They never did anything. I don't know if you noticed, but the Chargers had 6 and 7 defensive backs on the field the entire football game. They didn't use a middle linebacker, except for, I think, 1 or 2 short yardage plays. They put a middle linebacker in the game. But other than that, they had 6 or 7 DBs on the field for, I think, 60 snaps of that game, which is unheard of in the NFL. And they showed early on that they were going to funnel everything to the middle in terms of run. They weren't going to let Jackson or any of the running backs get outside. They were going to have every run play go right up the middle. And it wasn't working for the Ravens. They go into halftime, and what do they do in the second half? They do the same thing. So again, for me, maybe it sounds like I'm being negative on this Monday morning, but what are these coaches, what were they doing yesterday? And
well, there's nothing to say but the negatives, because there was a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean,
my dad's like, why are you being so negative about these games? I'm like, what positives can you see in this?
There were some positives, but the fact of the matter is the Ravens waited until the middle of the fourth quarter to let it loose when the game was already over. Then they decide, we're going to try and win this game. We're going to try and open up the offense and let our quarterback throw the football. And it's funny because I'm sitting there watching the game and friends of mine are saying, put in Flacco. They need to put in Flacco. It's like,
no, you're not kidding.
No, even the commentators were talking about putting in Flacco.
I was laughing about that. That was ridiculous. That's a ridiculous
concept. And I'm sitting here thinking, why would you put in Flacco if you're not trying to throw the ball with your current quarterback? And if anybody's going to bring you back from 2 touchdowns down, it's this guy, not the dude on the bench who got, I mean, honestly, benched earlier this year. Let's be
honest. Jackson had a 6-1 record as a starter going into that game. Why not just keep him, you know?
Well, the idea was, okay, he's not a throwing quarterback and we're behind, so let's put in the guy who's a better throwing quarterback. But Joe Flacco isn't really much more than anything other than a game manager nowadays. So we're not talking about Joe Flacco from when he won the Super Bowl. We're talking about a guy who's thrown for like 160
yards. Shadow of his former self.
Yeah, 160 yards a game. I mean, checkdowns and things like that. Not what you're looking for when you're behind. You're looking for, obviously, some more firepower. You're trying to score points. You're trying to come back and win the football game. What about the Chargers, though? Great defensive game plan. First and foremost, got to tip your cap to Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator. That team was well prepared. But the Chargers' offense, not very good. They were lucky, though. They were lucky that they played a team that couldn't get out of their own way on the other side of the ball. But I think that offense will have to do much better next week against the New England Patriots. What do you think?
Absolutely. But I do have to say that this is not the same Patriots team we've seen in the past. This team actually is kind of struggling, to be honest with you. And you can say this may be the weakest Patriots team we've had in a long time. So the Chargers may have the work cut out for them, but they need to improve a lot in order to beat the Patriots still.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done. Melvin Gordon's had that little bit of an injury, a little bit of a scare. for fans. And he's still, I say he's still going to be glowed, but question will go into the next game. But overall,
you're going from a quarterback, you're playing against a quarterback who has been in every situation and has won everything. The week before, this was Lamar Jackson's first ever playoff game. He's only started NFL games 7 times. It's going to be a completely different game for the Chargers next week.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And when you look at that, you see, like, whole new game plan, whole new change in their game plan, like I said, defense, offensively. Like, this is a completely different team than the Ravens.
I have
for
to
sure.
ask you a question.
Go for it.
Can you think of a more opposite quarterback going from Lamar Jackson to Tom Brady? Can you think of something more opposite than that? Currently in the NFL.
Michael Vick to, like, Brett Favre.
He's not
Favre.
Currently in the NFL.
Well, I'm just using it as a random example. Like, Michael Vick to Brett Favre, you know?
But currently in the NFL, a rookie quarterback with little to none experience who runs a ton but doesn't throw to Tom Brady, who doesn't run at all, throws a ton, has won and been in a million Super Bowls, it seems like, and a million playoff games.
Jeez.
There's really no comparison. It's actually the opposite.
Like, I'm thinking, like, maybe Baker Mayfield to Drew Brees type of thing.
I even think they're closer, though, because at least they're, like, similar size.
Maybe Deshaun Watson to Drew Brees.
Even still,
I'm thinking of any possible situation. I'm thinking Drew Brees is the
Chargers
the guy.
Defense is going to completely change their game plan. For whatever they did against Lamar Jackson will be completely different this weekend, because Tom Brady and that offense is not nearly the same style, the same skills and attributes coming from them as the Ravens quarterback and that offense have. So for the Chargers, I'm not sure about you. What do you think about this? When I watched the game, at the end of the game, even though the Chargers won, and I thought they were very convincing in the way they won, sure, it got a little bit, I guess, interesting at the end, but I never really thought the Chargers were going to lose that game.
Okay.
I still left
I
that game
so
even
either.
With even with a good win, like a good performance and a mostly comfortable win. I didn't leave that game thinking, man, I actually think that they have a better chance of winning the Super Bowl than I did a week before.
I agree with that.
Like, they didn't impress me really. Their defense was good for sure.
They were just there. They were just it's just nothing. I wouldn't say improve or dip or like decline. I would just say neutral.
It just felt like the Ravens weren't ready for the situation, whereas the Chargers were. You know,
yeah.
Like, I kind of feel like the Chargers won because the Ravens really lost. If that makes sense.
Yeah, the Ravens did fumble 3 times in the first 8 snaps of the game.
And they never adjusted until the fourth quarter, middle of the fourth quarter. Then they realized, oh, maybe we should spread this defense out.
Yeah, it was too little too late to adjust. And I can't believe it took them that long to adjust also. It took them an extremely long time. And after the first quarter, they should have adjusted, not the fourth. Like, there was a lot to work on. It was crazy. And it's just ridiculous how much this team needed to, like, you only have an hour, I would say, to adapt, and they adapted with 50 in the next 58 minutes. You know what I mean? It was too little too late. Incredibly too little too late.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And anything else about this game we should mention? Like, I mean, I know the Ravens also came back and won this game, but we said, like, too little too late.
No, I think the Chargers will have a lot on their plate this weekend, but they did get the win. They deserve the win, and now they'll get to see if they are for real.
I do have to say, if it's any time to play the Patriots in Foxborough, this is probably the best time to beat them.
Yeah, maybe.
This might be the weakest teams the Patriots have had.
Maybe. I'm
skeptical still?
I'm skeptical because...
But you can see why people think that.
I think this is the most unattractive style that we've seen from the Patriots in their run. I'm not going to say it's the worst we've seen, but I understand.
So if you saw them at a bar, you wouldn't pick up on them?
The Patriots have just been winning football games. They haven't been putting up huge numbers like the Chiefs or the Rams or the Saints. They just grind them out. And But I think they're comfortable with that. Like, that's the thing. Like, I know what you're saying. You're not playing. Like, the Patriots are not going to blow out the Chargers on this weekend.
Oh, no.
They're not. But I don't know if that means that the Chargers will actually have a better chance of winning this game. Mm-hmm. I'm skeptical because I could see them cruising and then just kind of burying the Chargers in this game. You know, it won't be a huge scoring game, or
it's gonna be rough. It's gonna be brutal. It's gonna be one of those knockdown, drag 'em out brawls.
Patriots at home. They say the temperature is gonna be in the 20s. It looks like the forecast as of today. That can change, obviously. But still. But I think we need to move on to the main course last night. That's what I'm calling that game. The main course, the defending Super Bowl champions.
This is the most fun I've had watching a game that was this low scoring.
Defending Super Bowl champions on their quest, on their heroic quest to win their second title in a row. You know, they were dead 3 weeks ago. They're now back. They make the playoffs.
They got a Eagle lifeline. Basically, they got a transplant from the Eagles.
I feel they got a little bit of a. I feel like they were a little bit fortunate because they got to play a Bears team. Now, the Bears are a good team, but young quarterback. I feel like the Eagles, that was kind of a good matchup for them, an ugly football game. I felt like they'd feel comfortable in that.
Mm-hmm.
And man, they pull off.
Okay.
They pull it off.
Do they pull it off, or do they just get lucky off a missed field goal?
Both. They win, though.
Okay. We have to talk about the field
goal. They were clutch. You have to say this. The Eagles offense, so I mean, I'm sure the people out there listening know, but the Bears missed a field goal to end the game to lose. Eagles move on.
And if you were on social media and you saw some Bears fans, you were highly entertained by their anger.
But I think the fact is a lot of these games, it's very small margins between you being a hero and you being, you know, the worst of the worst, and we saw that big time because
being a kicker in the NFL is the worst job in the NFL.
If Parkey makes that kick, we're all talking about how clutch it was. He was 4 for 4. You know, he would have been the MVP last night if he would have made that kick. Would you disagree with that?
I wouldn't disagree.
He would have been 4 for 4. He would have scored 12 points.
It was a 40, what was it, 43 yarder? It wasn't that short.
It wasn't a chip shot. It wasn't a chip shot.
Which, you'd think at the 27-yard line it would be.
Can we think about that for a minute? The Bears scored, 15 points?
Yes.
And he scored 9. So if he would have scored the field goal, he would have had 12 of the 18 points. He would have absolutely been the MVP of last night. But he is not. And he will forever... Is he what's his name, Steve Bartman? Is he the new Steve Bartman?
Oh, don't bring him back. He doesn't need all the publicity again.
No, but the Cubs won. The Cubs won, so no one cares anymore.
I know, but his family still does.
I know.
Remember, they were supposed to make amends with him, and he said, no, I don't want to be... I don't think he's been out of his house since 2003.
But is Cody Parkey the new Steve Bartman?
I think that was way worse because the Bears have won a championship in the last 100 years.
You see Cody Parker get booed off the field.
Yeah, I felt bad for that. That's not fair. But you can, as a fan of football and of a team, I understand the frustration, but cursing the kid, there's no reason for that. I understand your frustration, Chicago Bears fans, but
I got to give him credit.
He's already feeling bad enough. You don't need to add fuel to the fire.
I have to give him credit. The dude sat there in front of his locker and answered every question that was given to him. He took it in the chops.
I got to respect that, too.
He could have easily just said, I don't want to talk about it.
And the players backed him up, too, which was nice.
They did. And they should, because let's be honest. We're sports fans, and people like us who talk about sports every day, you know, we latch on to narratives, right? Like, we say, oh, the kicker screwed up, but because it's easy to talk about.
He's the scapegoat.
Yeah, he's the scapegoat. That's the story. But if we're being honest, the Bears lost that football game, in total. Yeah. They made multiple mistakes.
It's a team effort when you lose a game.
Their offense was pretty bad for most of the night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you agree with that? They couldn't score.
There was a lot of to be desired.
They had one touchdown. They kept getting stopped when they got inside Eagles territory. And, hey.
It was a team effort to lose that game.
The Eagles do what the Eagles do, you know?
For sure.
It sounds funny to say that the Eagles do what the Eagles do, and that's just grind them out.
It's winning by any means necessary in the playoffs, and that's how they won that game, for sure.
Nick Foles wasn't particularly great, but he was great on that last drive.
Yeah, he made that pass to Golden Tate for the touchdown, but at the first half, he threw that brutal interception. One of
it
two.
Was a terrible throw.
But you know the one I'm talking about, maybe.
Yeah, at the end of the half.
Yeah, it was.
Threw it in a double coverage. It was a floater. It wasn't had no.
You could
chance.
You could say it was like triple coverage at that point. Like it got pretty ridiculous.
He should have just
and
thrown it away.
I could have ran to. I could have flown to Chicago, stood on that field, and caught that ball. How long it was in the air for?
Mm-hmm.
That's and I'm in California.
Yeah. So, it's really when I break down this game, neither team could run the ball. Some decent passing plays.
This was defense. Or I can't even say that. It was just an ugly football game.
I mean, the Eagles had 300 total yards.
Just like what Hugh Jackson used to say after a loss. Got to look at the tape. Every single loss, got to look at the tape.
The Bears had 350 yards of total offense. But again, most of it was all through the air. Foles had 266 passing. Trubisky had 300 passing. Again, though, both offenses, they really struggled when they got into plus territory.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a lot of field goals. And ultimately, I mean, we'll remember this game for Cody Parkey missing. But I thought Nick Foles was okay. He was really good on that last drive. But one thing that stood out to me was I thought the Eagles were so dumb when they called that timeout on fourth down before they threw the touchdown pass because they had all three timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, it was under 2 minutes. So if they didn't get the fourth down conversion and they had all three timeouts, they could get the ball back.
Yeah.
But because they used that timeout, they were left like, now we have to score a touchdown.
I really don't know why they used that timeout. There was no reason for it, was there? I think they had everything set up.
Honest,
it doesn't seem like they were offset or anything.
I don't know, to be honest. But I almost feel like taking the delay of game would have been better in that situation because, I mean, obviously you can't say that now because they scored a touchdown on the next play.
You think it was like one of those things that was like last second, like it just came out of nowhere, like, oh, God, timeout.
I just really thought like, wow, like they really screwed this up by using a timeout when they didn't need to use one. But it worked out.
I know 5 yards is a lot, but in that situation, you're looking for a touchdown regardless.
For sure. For sure. I know it's hard, you know, if you're not in the situation. I don't know if there was a miscommunication. I don't know what happened. We don't know what happened. But the fact is, logically speaking, having three timeouts there in case you do not get the first down or the touchdown, in that situation, the touchdown, you have to give yourself a chance to get the ball back, and they didn't give themselves a chance. But ultimately, they didn't need to because Golden Tate scores a touchdown, and the Eagles just do Eagles things, and they win. All we have to talk about the catch no catch.
Oh my, yeah. What did he rule it?
They said because there was not a clear recovery that it was an incomplete pass, which I don't understand
so
that at all.
It was a fumble, but since no clear recovery,
it was not a complete pass.
That makes no sense. Just say no one. It was no clear recovery. Can you replay?
Player should just be down, right? Like the player should just be down.
Yeah.
Where the ball ended.
If it's a fumble, then that's not an incomplete pass. That's the ball should stop where the ball landed.
It's like,
and I understand the no clear recovery because no one was around the ball.
And
whatsoever.
The referee picked it up. They should have tackled the
first down. God, can that XFL? I know you're coming in like 2020. Please make that a thing where if the ref picks up the ball inadvertently, just tackle his ass.
You know what's funny is that the NFL all these obscure rules seem to come out in like the worst times for them, right? Like, remember the Steelers catch on Monday Night Football last year where Jesse James is rolling into the end zone and then they called incomplete?
You mean where his hand rolled?
And then the Dez Bryant catch a couple years ago in the playoffs.
People are still upset about that one.
Yeah, like all these things, the tuck rule, like all these things happen, and like the NFL couldn't be worse with their timing, like when these things
come
to light.
Was this as crucial as those ones?
It wasn't, but it just highlights the fact that it's not the refs, though. It's actually not the refs. It's
the
rules.
Rules.
Like the ref got it right. The referee actually got it right by the rule, and it's like we always
but
blame the
rule
ref.
Made zero sense.
Exactly. Exactly.
Why does a fumble turn into an incompletion when there's no clear recovery? Like you said, it should be as where the ball died. That's where the play should end.
It's like
like the ball goes out of bounds there. Boom.
It's like it still happened.
So where would it be at? Like the it was at the goal line, wasn't it?
Where he fumbled, I think it was like inside the 10, but it was probably like at the 6, maybe.
That's a game changer.
Yeah, it was like a 30-yard pass play.
Yeah. But it was still like how they called it was weird. How the rules are weird. Refs are weird. They look weird. They
just, the NFL just gets these plays wrong. Although, you know what? We have to talk about that other
and
play.
And yet, Goodell thinks the biggest problem is like touchdown celebrations.
I'm not saying that this would have changed the outcome of the game, but we got to talk about the Melvin Gordon fumble. Because I'm pretty sure he fumbled at the goal line where the Ravens returned it for a touchdown.
Oh, you mean back this
the
morning's
Ravens,
games?
Yeah, the Ravens, Chargers. You remember Melvin Gordon's diving for the end zone?
Yeah.
And the Ravens returned it for a touchdown, but they ruled it that he was down?
Yeah.
I know they couldn't change the call because it wasn't clear that he was fumbling the football before he was down, but I'm pretty darn sure he was still on his feet.
Yeah.
That ball was moving. He got a little lucky there.
It could have changed the entire game.
They called on the field was going to stand type plays. You know?
Indisputable evidence.
Yeah. Because it was never going to be clear.
But anyways, it did kind of look like he was losing the football.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was so close. It was too close to call.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the refs' defense, it was too close to call. And, you know, it's one of those instances in where you're just lucky. You're just sometimes luck has a lot to do with
luck
it. Especially
will change games.
Oh, well, Tuck Rule for a perfect example and other stuff of that nature. But you know what else is not luck? You know what else is lucky? This deal we have for you for Audible. Listening to audiobooks inspires us, motivates us, even brings us closer. And now there's no better place to listen than Audible. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet, and now Audible members get more than ever before. Each month, they get three titles of their choice. One audiobook, two Audible originals, and fitness programs they can't get anywhere else. There's never been a better time to experience Audible. Try it free for 30 days by visiting audible.com/GSMCbook. Or by texting the code GSMCBOOK to 500500. Remember, if you want this deal, try it for free for 30 days. Go to audible.com/GSMCBOOK or by texting the code GSMCBOOK to 500500.
What happens to your decision-making when you drink? Well, after one drink, you feel confident. A few more, and calling your ex at 1 a.m. seems like a great idea. And you're pretty sure the secret to a great taco is four-day-old macaroni. The bottom line, drunk you doesn't make great decisions. So you're risking a DUI or worse if you count on him to get you home. Plan before you party. Get home safe. Brought to you by Washington Target Zero.
Welcome back, everyone, to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We just finished talking about the wild card games that happened this weekend. Now, we're moving on to the NBA, and there was some interesting news in Minnesota, wasn't there, Mark?
You can actually blow a team out and still get fired as the coach.
Shocker, right? 22-point victory for the Minnesota Timberwolves over the LA Lakers. And then what happened again?
Tom Thibodeau, coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
You know his name sounds like Dale Dimmadome, owner of the Dimmsdale Dimmadome? Fairly Odd Parents reference. Never mind. It was a cartoon back when I was a kid. People will get it. That's my age.
Who? If you get it,
my age.
Tweet at Jeff Malinoff.
Dom Dimmadome, owner of the Dimmsdale Dimmadome. That's the joke.
Oh.
Pretty sure it's Dom Dimmadome or Dale Dimmadome.
I'll take your word for it. But what I won't take your word for is, well, I haven't even got your thoughts. What do you think about the firing, first and foremost? Tom Thibodeau has been released of his duties. Not just coach. He was president.
It was Doug Dimino.
Thibodeau was president and head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I didn't expect someone that has that kind of job can get fired, to be completely honest with you. But he did. He got fired in his office, and he was confused as everybody else was when he heard about the firing. The guy just walked in and says, "You're fired," and he goes, "What?"
That's too. You remember when Tom Thibodeau was like the big name coaching candidate, assistant coach for the Celtics, And everybody was like, man, we got to get this guy. This is the guy.
Well, okay. Can I say something that was should have been his death note?
Sure.
When he rejected multiple first-round selection choice from the Rockets instead of trading Jimmy Butler to pennies on the dollar to Philadelphia. I'm sorry.
That might be true.
That should have been when he got fired.
That might be true, but if you're him, how do you – if you're him, looking back, he had to take that trade and not the one that Houston offered because he wasn't going to have a job in a year if he took the other one, right?
I disagree. If he had five or four first-round picks like they were
right, but they would have lost more games and he still would have got fired is what I'm saying.
Having that many first-round picks might have changed some things.
I'm not saying he made the right move for the franchise, but didn't he make the better move for himself? Because he kind of gave himself a chance to win some games,
right? If he made the right move for
the
franchise, wouldn't he get the benefit of the doubt and maybe even get one more extra year?
I mean, we don't know that. We don't know what their prerogative was. We don't know if they were already thinking about firing him no matter what, you know? But at least you give yourself a chance if you're winning games, and they've been okay since the trade, right?
Yeah, they've been. I mean
they're
19 and 21.
Yeah, they're 19 and 21. They're in a tough Western Conference. I mean, I don't know. It's.
Do you think
they're 5-5 in the last 10?
He was going to get fired regardless.
I mean, if it was make the playoffs or get fired, I feel like he was going to get fired.
Okay.
Know? But now two jobs where he's been fired, and then both places, Chicago and in Minnesota, they say that the players don't really like playing for him. So that's kind of a double. That's two in a row, two places where maybe he didn't get the best out of his players and got the most out of them due to whatever, you know, rift there is there.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think it was kind of a long time coming because he was making pretty questionable decisions throughout the season. He was trying to bring the Bulls to Minnesota. Remember the Timber Bulls or whatever they were called in the offseason?
Getting Derrick Rose was good.
Well, it's worked out, but like, who else did they try to get? They've been trying to get a bunch of other players that were on the Bulls that are way out of their prime. So there's a lot I don't agree with.
They got Taj Gibson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a Bulls player. The timing might seem weird, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I think the reason why they did this right now is because this is the time of year, Jeff, where NBA teams will ask their season ticket holders to renew.
Yeah.
So we'll see moves like this happen at this time of year because if you're asking a season ticket holder to renew and they say, why should I renew if we're going to be not a playoff team and I don't really have any... optimism for the current regime?
Optimism is a strong word in a sense.
No, that's what I'm saying. You ask a season ticket holder, that's why would somebody want to re-sign as a season ticket holder without any optimism?
Yeah, I'm not renewing my season tickets.
You know what's interesting? Did you see who they hired?
Ryan
Saunders.
That's right. And they're also eyeing Chauncey Billups as a candidate for their GM or head coaching role.
I find it interesting, though, that Ryan Saunders is their new head coach. We're talking about a 32.
Interim. Don't forget interim.
Right. I'm willing to bet a decent amount that he ends up being their coach for good.
Well, they are eyeing Chauncey Billups, which I think he will be the general manager if they are...
We've also seen
this.
That Fred Hoiberg is a candidate to be their head coach.
There's like 15 different candidates.
It would be funny if Hoiberg is their next head coach because that would be twice in a row that he followed Thibodeau.
Okay, let me ask you this. Should they take their time with this and just have an interim coach throughout the rest of the season?
I think they should definitely keep an interim coach for the rest of the season. Absolutely. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because Flip Saunders is like a god in Minnesota. Flip Saunders is the best coach they've ever had.
Okay.
He's very, very respected in Minnesota. And his son comes in. His son, obviously the name, Saunders. That will get some fans excited. Fans who love the team will be excited. You know, it's kind of like 49ers fans when Kyle Shanahan took the job. Mike Shanahan was a coach for the 49ers, a important, successful coach for the 49ers, not their head coach, but a coach for the 49ers. So when Shanahan, quote unquote, came home because he grew up on the sidelines in San Francisco, fans really liked that, right?
Because
it was
totally connected with
one of them, right?
And that's everyone's dream, right? To be the fan of your hometown team.
Yep.
And being the coach or the owner or whatever. That is the dream. So that's
so
perfect.
Ryan Saunders grew up on the sidelines with his dad coaching the team. He's going to be well liked. The fans are going to love him. And you know what, Jeff? Players don't like playing for Thibodeau. So now what's going to happen? All these players are going to be happy, and they're going to play well. They're going to win some games. Watch. There will be a bump. I guarantee you there will be a bump in their performance. You'll see them win a couple games that maybe they shouldn't win. Maybe mm-hmm. they'll beat the Warriors the next time they play. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be just because of the change. Look at the Browns when they fired Hugh Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Is Greg Williams the greatest coach ever, or do you think the Browns just actually were happy playing for somebody else, anybody else?
I think that I'll take the latter on that one.
Like, we could have been the coach and the Browns would have won more games, right? I could have been the coach. You could have been the coach. They would have won because we would have just said, you guys
should we just co-coach this and handle it?
We would have just said, hey, Baker, call your own plays. I'll stay out of the way. And then the players would have rallied behind it for at least a couple games.
I would definitely be like, you know, I'm not going to look at the tape. I'm just going to let my team run. Just do everything the opposite of Hugh Jackson. He looks at the tape. I won't look at the tape.
So we're going to see a bump, I guarantee you, in their performance. And that's why I think, Jeff, that Ryan Saunders has a really good chance of being their coach long term, because he's a young coach. This is kind of like a thing right now in sports, right? Sean McVay, Brad Stevens, young coach. Young coach is kind of like a thing now. Like, we want to get the next young, bright mind, right?
Yeah, you got to get the future.
But Ryan Saunders has the pedigree, even though this is his first head coaching job, he has the pedigree of being in a family of the greatest coach in Timberwolves history. So, like, people will give him a pass on his inexperience, right? They'll say, well, he knows because his dad was the coach. His dad gave him the tools that he needed to be a coach one day. So we'll see. We'll see what happens, though. I'm actually excited to see what the Timberwolves do with their new young Ryan Saunders as their head coach.
Yeah, we will see. There is a lot of debate about this. And obviously, it's one of those things where you got to think about it. But will they continue this coach and have him the rest of the season? Who knows?
Because I think they will, but yeah, we'll find out.
Like, then when it's interim in the title, nothing's written.
Sure.
Down. Obviously, this is written in...
Like, they don't have any reason to...
This is written in putty.
Like, I think even if Hoiberg is their next guy, they don't have any reason to get Hoiberg right now, right? Like, he's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So just carry on and see what happens. You're not fighting for a head coach right now, you know?
But again, you're right. They should... What they should do is take their time and look for a coach that undoubtedly can be their future. Maybe look at younger assistant coaches and all that good stuff. But will they do that? That is yet to be determined.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we should take a break. And we should come back and talk about that Natty.
Natalie?
Natty.
Oh, Natty. Yes, I know a Natty.
The Natty. Bama Clemson Natty.
Yes, Natty's pretty cute. Anyways, we'll get right back right after this.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Welcome back, everyone, to the GSMC Sports Podcast. We talked about the firing in Minnesota. We talked about the four wildcard games that happened this weekend. Now, we're moving on to the Natty, the national championship game. Clemson and Alabama for the third time.
The granddaddy of them all.
That's the Rose Bowl.
Oh. But wouldn't this one be the granddaddy of them all?
Well, no, granddaddy is like the oldest one. You know, the granddaddy of them all is the grandfather. But Roosevelt is the grandfather. Sure. This one will be the grandest stage of them all.
We have two undefeated teams, 14-0 Clemson, 14-0 Alabama. Alabama is a 5.5-point favorite, and they will be playing in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium, where that is already controversial in itself. I guess there's still a lot of tickets available for cheaper than they are normally available for.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your overall impression of this game? What do you think about not just the game, but what about the location?
I feel like I'm having deja vu because I've already seen this.
What do you think about them playing this game in Santa Clara? Do you think it takes away from...
No, I don't think it's the destination that matters. I think it's just the two teams. It's all it should. That's all it should matter, at least. It should not matter about the destination.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's like at a high school stadium, they'd be like, oh, maybe that's not the best idea to place
it. Did you see that interview with Saban and Dabo?
No, I did not. What are you
talking
about?
They were interviewed, I think, on ESPN yesterday. They were together. They're at the same
time.
That's
awkward.
No, it was cool. It was fun because they're friends. They're like lifelong friends, you know. You know they grew up like a few miles apart?
Huh. I did not know this.
It's always entertaining to me because they grew up in basically the same county, but they have different accents. Like, Dabo sounds very Southern.
Saban does not. Well, he... Yeah, but he's been outside of the South for a long period of time before he came back.
Still.
I mean, the most Southern...
If you heard Nick Saban talk, you wouldn't think that he was from the South, right?
Yeah, but in his later ages, he's not been in the South. The most Southern he's been is Miami, and that's not very a Southern area.
But Dabo definitely sounds like he's from the South.
He sounds like he's straight out of Alabama, for sure.
And when he says... The way that he says things, like his cliches and his metaphors, are very Southern. They're hilarious. He is a super entertaining coach, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
But regardless, who do you think wins this game? Alabama is a 5.5-point favorite. They're the odds-on favorite. They've been the favorite. They've been the favorite the whole year. Mm-hmm. Will they go ahead and win this game, or will they be upset by Clemson?
Well, if the Clemson does win, would you actually consider it an upset?
I mean, sure.
Like, is it Alabama's, like, whoa, an upset?
When Alabama loses, it's always an upset until something drastically changes.
Like, I think an upset is more like a team that has no chance of winning. Clemson has a good chance of winning here.
Yeah. 5.5-point favorite, though, is decent. It's not like they're
a huge
underdog.
It's Alabama's reputation that's 5.5-point favorites. It's not
and their
the
depth.
Team. It's, yeah.
Their depth is really good.
And their offensive line is the best in the national in the entire country.
So what do you see happening, and what score do you see?
I got to stick with Alabama. I picked Alabama to win it at the beginning, and I say they're going to win it now. I'm going to say 32-21. Give me Alabama.
32-21 or 31?
31, sorry. Did I say 32? I'm
32. Sorry, what do you think the score
31-21 Alabama. 31-21. I did not mean to say 32. I apologize.
31-21 Alabama. So you like them to win by 10 points.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's going to be one of those things where they're up by 7, then they're going to hit a field goal to seal it type of thing.
So there's a bet for tonight's game that I'm very interested in making.
What's the bet?
The over-under on the first half. The over-under first half is 40 points. I think the under hits.
In the first half?
The total for the first half between the two teams.
Oh.
The total in the first half. Over-under 40. Under hits.
I'll say under, too.
Because I think both these teams start off slow tonight. I think there's a feeling out period usually at the beginning of these games.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think... That's a bet. That's, I think, the best bet for tonight. I think Alabama wins this game, Jeff. I wouldn't be shocked if Clemson wins, though. I really wouldn't. So I think that Clemson will cover. I don't know if they'll win, but I think that they'll lose or win. But if they lose, it'll be under 5 points. They'll lose. I got a score of 34-31. Alabama wins 34-31.
34. Wait, say that one more time.
34-31.
Oh, so last second field goal type steal.
Maybe, yeah, or maybe Clemson misses a last second field goal. Cody Parkey.
Oh, it's so worse for a college kid to miss a game, especially in that. I feel so bad for him. That's losing in the national. Don't let that happen to a kid. Please don't jinx him like that.
I think that I think that they will. I think this will be a really good game. Do you think it'll be a? You have a 10-point game, but do you think it'll be an ugly 10-point?
I won't say it. I'll say it is a very competitive matchup for sure.
You know what I did like?
Mm.
Clemson is playing this game in honor of Dwight Clark for the 49ers.
That's cool.
Clemson alma mater, Dwight Clark.
He did pass away earlier last year due to ALS, which is a very debilitating disease. And he was the iconic guy that made the catch.
I read a story that the Tigers will, when they arrive to Levi's Stadium today, mm-hmm. they will have a ceremony in front of Dwight Clark's statue.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So that just got unveiled this year, by the way. So
well,
check for that.
Mind
I
you.
Think that's cool. Dabo Swinney, I think, is one of the coolest head coaches in all of sports.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't know much about Dwight Clark, I recommend watching his Football Life documentary. Very good stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think that's it for today. I hope everybody enjoys the national championship. We'll be back tomorrow.
We will. You will. We all will. It is national championship. It is time to see who the best team in college football is. And then we are going to see who the best team in NFL is after the Super Bowl. And then we'll go to the draft. And it is exciting time in the world of football.
Tomorrow we'll break down all of that, plus maybe some NBA action. And we'll see what else is going on in the world of sports.
Have a good day, everybody.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.